Welcome to the world of Cars and Crafts with David and Linda. On this new trek through the mountainsides, we'll explore the raw torque and the flavorful country mystique that is Colorado. Presented by Montsorvino and Boxing Brothers Hard Cider, reminding you to drink responsibly and use designated drivers.
Good afternoon. This is Cars and Crafts with David and
Linda.
Linda, KPPF.
Just following your lead.
Yeah.
I'll jump into it when I'm good here. History with Colorado Springs for 21 years. I'm not a native. I'm a military brat and a military vet. Come from a military family, married to a military spouse. I have no experience in drinking at all. Right. So I don't know what a good beer is. I really don't know what a good beer is. I'm still learning. But with local cars and crafts, I feel like I get to learn a lot with David here. He's got the history and he's the brains behind the cars, but I'm also learning. So he's a great mentor from that perspective. And then with the crafts, we're not just talking about beer. We can talk about cider and what else is there?
Wine and distilled spirits.
All of that stuff. Yeah. So I get to learn about everything. I'm in the best seat in the house in Colorado Springs, learning about the two things that make me happy, and cars and crafts.
And Linda's too humble to talk about it, but she's a big force in Colorado Springs. She is the queen of networking and has been for many years. Linda and I met years ago. We don't even remember where it was or how long ago it was. But
well, we don't remember. He remembers.
I vaguely remember, but I can't give her a date to nail it down for her. But it was a networking event. Everybody knows Linda. Linda knows everybody. Everybody likes Linda. I like Linda. So, you know, so Linda's a big deal in Colorado Springs. My background is my family's always been in cars. I've always been a car guy. I've owned hundreds of cars. I've driven hundreds of cars. I've spent time on the racetrack in many different cars, shifter carts, modified stock cars, all kinds of stuff. And grew up in the mountains of Colorado, driving too fast on dirt roads. That's what we did for entertainment. We threw a lot of cars off the road, created a lot of havoc, and you know, that's how you learn. And in those days, the cars were slow and the cars were cheap, so it just didn't matter that much. And the police were very scarce. So once we dug each other out of the ditches and dug each other out of the woods, we'd bang the panels out and bolt some new wheels back on and go do it again the next night. So
nice.
The area I grew up in is home to a lot of guys that ran the dirt on the Pikes Peak Hill Climb. So I know a lot of those guys, grew up with those guys. All the names you're familiar with from the dirt days, Voschultz most prominently, and then Regester and Brady and Nankovich and all these guys that, you know, pretty much just mountain guys that bolted cars together and ran the Pikes Peak Hill Climb. To me, the Pikes Peak Hill Climb is one of the greatest challenges in racing, and I'm partly colored by that because I grew up watching these guys do it. But to climb that mountain with those drop-offs on a dirt road at the speeds that they do, it's always impressed me to no end. I'm not such a huge fan of it being paved, but maybe that's just because I'm old school and I grew up with you know, the dirt guys on the dirt. I fully expected that, this is a nice segue here. I fully expected that when they paved the hill climb, that people would bring these ex Formula One cars out, because a 5-year-old Formula One car is almost no value. So there's a lot of guys that have these cars in their garages and they like to have excuses to drive them. The problem is, you get after a certain point, the Cosworth DFW cars that go back to say the mid 80s, probably at the latest, was the last car that you could probably start up in your garage with, you know, one or two people. Current technology, it takes 12 guys just to get the car started and warmed up. So it's a little impractical. But however, my point was that I thought they'd bring out these older Formula One cars with super sticky tires to set records on the Pikes Peak Hill Climb. And that hasn't happened. I'm not entirely sure why, but it hasn't happened. And I thought that kind of thinking would also kill the hill climb, because even on regular racetracks that are built for racing, at times with the G-forces and the stickiness of the tires, they will actually rip the pavement out of the corners. We even see it in NASCAR every now and then happen. So I know that the local powers that be don't want to be repaving the peak every year. So I thought if they ripped up the asphalt with these fast cars and sticky tires every year, that would kill the hill climb. Now, I've been wrong on that, thankfully. But it is quite a show, the hill climb these days, even with the road being paved. And I'm very impressed that it has such an international drawing, because there's, you know, Monster Nakajima, or I don't think that's his last name, but people know him as Monster, great big Japanese guy. He brings his multi-engine Suzuki's out and whatever else he's got going on. Sebastian Loeb recently was in a Peugeot, I think, or a Renault, one of those. Volkswagen has a full electric car that they brought. So the hill climb seems to be well and good, and there's lots of good things happening up there. That's my background. I'm just a real car guy. Always been a real car guy. And part of the excitement of this show for me is that I know a lot of real car guys in the area, and I want to get a lot of these real car guys on the show. As an example, later on in this show, Courtney put together a very exciting 63 house car, which we're going to talk to him about out of PPIR. So, just an example, but there's a lot of people in town doing a lot of cool things with import cars, with domestic cars, with old cars, with new cars, race cars, with lowriders. So we're going to get to meet and talk to all those people on the show.
So the hope is to bring some fun and some knowledge and some background and some excitement and the community and the beer and everything else together in this show for everyone to listen and tune in, where, no matter where you are, what you're doing. You can always just tune us in, turn us on, podcast or whatever, and enjoy the conversation.
Sunday afternoons. Okay. Once the lawn is mowed and the honey-do list is done, to stand around your buddy's garage while he's working on his car, have a beer with him and just talk cars. And that's what the show is.
Sure.
We're going to talk cars. We're going to talk good beer. We're gonna highlight and spotlight local craftsmen, whether they're banging on panels, wrenching on motors, or blending beautiful wine in their back room, like our friends Matt and Katie over at Montservino Urban Winery.
Boxing Brothers
Hard Cider.
Yeah.
Big recent news. So George Russell was finally confirmed for the second seat at Mercedes for Formula One.
Yeah, I heard. That's kind of exciting.
It is exciting. Did you see the lead up to all that? Did you know that was coming?
I didn't know. As everybody knows, maybe that you don't know, I'm the novice in this and I'm learning as we go. I read that something was happening with Kimi, that forced something with George, that forced something with Bottas, but that's about the best that I could tell you.
Okay. That's very good. Yeah. Kimi Raikkonen has 350 starts in Formula One or something. He's the Iron Man of Formula One. He's been with Alfa Romeo the last few years, and he announced his retirement earlier this year. So
I heard it was via Instagram.
Could be.
No, and that's what they said. He announced his retirement on Instagram. Who does that?
He's
Kimi does.
Kimi does. He's always been his own man. He's certainly trendier and more socially adept than I am. There's no question about that.
For sure. No doubt about that.
Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome.
Now it's time for a commercial.
That was great. I loved it.
Yeah, so Kimi vacated the seat at Alfa Romeo, leaving an opportunity for, in this case, Valtteri Bottas, who's been rumored to be getting squeezed out of Mercedes for some time. And for him to be able to land at Alfa Romeo is really very good for both parties. It's good for Valtteri because it extends his career, and it's good for Alfa because they get a good, seasoned, experienced, strong number one driver for their team.
Yeah, it's always been, since I've known him, and it's only been a short time, that he's kind of an arrogant, loud, obnoxious kind of guy, but I was corrected that that's his nature.
Well, yes, Northern European race car drivers are like that. Kimi's one of them. Valtteri's one of them. Somebody else has just popped in my head recently. Michael Schumacher was kind of like that. You know, he's German, which is that part of the world. Just stoic, keep to themselves. They come across as arrogant, and they are arrogant, quite frankly, as you have to be to do that.
Because Americans aren't, right? No, but I get it. That's really cool. And so my thought was with Bottas was, he's kind of an arrogant guy, but he's in the shadow of Hamilton, and he deserves to be in the limelight, doesn't he? I mean, with this move, I think he might have a better chance of that.
That's a very good point. Number two drivers, when they go to a team like Mercedes, know that they're the number two driver, and they get treated like the number two driver. Yeah. They get second best at resources. They get second best at everything. And they also are asked to stand down at certain points during the race weekend to make room for the number one driver. So he knew that going in, and all number two drivers are treated that way. It's very rare that a team, not that there's this many quote unquote number one drivers that are available, but it's very rare that a team will try to put two number one drivers together on the same team.
Yeah,
it's happened in the past. Yeah, with disastrous results.
Yeah. And from the race that I saw, which was pre-recorded for me, but in and during that race, he just seemed to be a little frustrated being asked to step down as a number two, you know, sometimes is, but I think he's ready to move.
Are you talking about the most recent race at Zandvoort?
Yes. Or,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He did not look. Well, he looked like he had a contract to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He drove that way. He acted that way. I mean,
the team treated him that way.
I was curious if he was going to go after the fastest lap towards the end there. And I don't know that he did or didn't on purpose, but it is what it is.
I think he did on purpose. Why not? You know, he doesn't.
What are they going to do?
Yeah. He doesn't have to leave any friends behind in Mercedes. So all of this, Kimi retiring and Bottas going to Alfa, left the second seat open at Mercedes for George Russell.
Sure.
The great English hope. There was a great picture this morning that turned up ESPN F1, and it's a picture of George Russell, like 10 years old, waiting to get Lewis Hamilton's autograph. Oh,
that's cool. I didn't see that.
Yeah. George is 23 now, so he might have been 12 years old. Let's say it's 10, 11 years ago. Yeah. Awesome. But Lewis was firmly ensconced in Formula One, and George was still a 12-year-old boy.
Wow. Wow. That's cool.
It is cool. George is very talented. The Williams car is not competitive. And when you talk about competitive or not competitive in this era of Formula One, you're talking about less than a second can cover the field during qualifying. This is 20 cars. And some have massive resources like Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, and some have not so massive resources like Alfa, Haas, cars toward the end of the field, the back end of the field. So for George to do what he's done in a Williams has been absolutely amazing. He actually did qualify on his own merit at Spa in the rain, second.
Jeez.
Yeah. And on paper, that Williams is 15th or 16th fastest. So for him to grab that car by the scruff of the neck in the rain and get it up in the second place.
That's some driving.
Yeah. And he consistently outperforms in qualifying with the Williams. The race pace doesn't quite hold up, but you know, again, the Williams is an underfunded team. So I know all of England is very excited to have George. And this is funny because Mercedes is a German team, but now they have two really top-notch, what should be top-notch British drivers.
Yeah. It'll be a new good year. How do you say that?
Yeah.
I need some more coffee.
More good years for your car. So England's very excited about George being elevated. And I think all of Formula One should be excited about George being elevated. I think it's fantastic.
So you think all of these moves would have happened if Kimi didn't retire?
They would have found some way to make it happen.
Oh.
Yeah, because Mercedes was clearly ready for a change. Right. Lewis probably only has a couple more years, quite frankly.
Well, I thought I read that his contract was good through 23, and that was it?
Yes.
Is that renewable, or what's happening there?
They're all renewable. They're also all cancelable. Oh. Like Nico Rosberg, who was the former number two for Lewis, he won the championship, took it away from Lewis, and he retired immediately thereafter, even though he may have had a couple more years left in that contract. I think he realized that he did something amazing, that he, you know, he won a championship from the number two seat.
Right.
That was as good as it was going to get.
Yeah. That's a good time to retire.
It is. And he seems like a renaissance guy, Nico. He pops up every now and then with critique on Formula One broadcasts, but it seems like he enjoys his family and has other stuff going on, and he doesn't sit around pining to get back in a Formula One seat. So
that's cool.
It is cool.
Okay.
Yeah. So you've been watching, even though you're a relatively new fan of Formula One, Linda, you've been watching the Max Lewis battle at the front. How does that look to you?
It's exciting. It's always exciting to watch Max and Lewis Hamilton go at it. Max, to me, he's obviously very young. Well, they're both really young. They're both doing extremely well, both in great cars. So I don't know how to separate the two of them. I don't know the different skills. I don't know any of that stuff. But I do know that Max is killing it right now. And this past weekend, where were they at this weekend?
Zandvoort. Which was
Zandvoort. Yeah.
Max was born in Belgium, raised in Holland. So last week he won in Belgium, this week he won in Holland. So it's a big deal for Max. And he took the lead over again. So huge. Okay. So it is rare, especially in this turbo hybrid era, that you do have two cars at the front fighting like they are, because for too long it's been Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
Because the Mercedes is so good and Lewis is so good. So for Max to do what he's done, and by the way, you call them both young, but I think Max is almost 10 years younger than Lewis.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Max is one of the youngest guys to get a primary seat ever.
Yeah, they said he was 23-ish.
Yeah, and this is third year or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting is that Red Bull is not a car manufacturer. Red Bull is a drinks.
Right.
Manufacturer going up against Mercedes, Mercedes-Benz. Mercedes has such a head start when they went into the turbo hybrid area. For those of you that don't know, if you're not paying attention to Formula One and the technology behind it, the current formula is a 1.6 liter V6 turbocharged with a battery assist with an electric drive. They get 1,000 horsepower out of that combination.
For those of you who can't see me, I'm shaking my head and rolling my eyes. That's amazing.
Yeah. So Mercedes had a huge advantage because they'd been working on this hybrid electric to gas to electric for a few years for their road cars before Formula One adopted it for the new, because they were V10s right before this, which everybody loved the V10. But trying to be more socially conscious, more environmentally conscious, F1 has made the transition to something that's supposed to harm the environment less and use less fuel and all that kind of stuff. So the point is that Mercedes had a huge advantage on everybody when they adopted this. And for Red Bull to do what they've done, very impressive.
Yeah.
And getting Max in that seat. So prior to Lewis dominating Formula One in the Mercedes, it was Red Bull. It was Sebastian Vettel in the Red Bull. He won 4 years in a row when he first came out for Red Bull, previous formula. The next year, they're changing the cars again.
Are they?
Yeah. So 2022 is a whole new car. So some of the teams at the back, Haas specifically, and some of the other ones more minorly, are doing zero development work in the car this year because they're focusing all their money and energy.
Next year.
Because they have less resources, right?
Right.
Exactly. On the car for next year. So it's huge.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I don't know if it's going to change enough to bust it wide open. Like if Mercedes is going to be all of a sudden the fourth best car, I don't see that happening. But hopefully it levels the playing field a little bit so we can see more battles like Max and Lewis. Maybe Leclerc from Ferrari can battle at the front. Mm-hmm. Maybe Bottas, you know?
I was going to ask, what's going on with McLaren? They were talking about a little bit about him yesterday as well, when I was watching yesterday. They were talking about McLaren. What's going on with them?
McLaren has a resurgence. They've really reorganized and pulled it together nicely. Zach Brown seems to be doing a great job. Lando Norris is just fantastic. The combination of Lando Norris in that McLaren is shocking how good it is. Daniel Ricciardo, who's in the number two seat in that team, is no slouch. He was number two to Vettel, I believe, for a while. Number two to Max. Super talented. And he's struggling with the McLaren. It doesn't quite suit his driving style.
Okay.
So that may be what you're alluding to when you ask what's going on with McLaren, about why the disparity, because you'll see Lando qualify top five and Ricciardo luckily maybe qualify top 12. And so why is that? And that's the case. There's nothing wrong with Daniel. It's just the way it's amazing the different driving styles, because you watch the cars go around a track, it's hard to tell the difference, but there's quite a bit of disparity between the way they want the cars to drive. Kimi, I believe, is one of them. Daniel's one of them. Michael Schumacher was this way. They really want the front end to bite. They want the front end to bite really hard upon turn in, and they do a lot of development and engineering to get their cars to do that. Some drivers are less sensitive. Some drivers prefer, you know, a looser car, but it's pretty interesting in that $300 million world that they can still get those kind of differences and that they'll still bother to do that for the drivers.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's exciting times. I mean, things are going well. And so I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, there's six races to go, I believe. Monza's coming up next. Monza's very fast, real long straightaways with a couple small corners.
Okay. That'll be fun.
Yeah. And it should highlight the Ferrari, believe it or not.
Good.
So maybe we'll see Ferrari come to the front, mix things up.
Good.
Get it more interesting.
Good, good, good. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
All right. Outstanding. So it's time for us to take a break. This is David.
And Linda, you're listening to Cars and Crafts on 98.5 FM, 1040 AM and 95.7 FM. We will return with
Courtney, who's going to talk about a 63 house car, and also Chelsea, who's the marketing brains behind PPIR. We had a great conversation with both of them when we were out there at the Rock and Rumble event recently. So stay tuned and we'll be back.
Very good.
So last year you came out here with a 62 Mercury, did I get that right?
Correct.
Okay, so tell us about that car.
So that car, I found it on Craigslist, and I traded a $500 70 Chevy pickup straight across for it.
Wow.
And that pickup I pretty much got for free for some other horse trading that I did. So the 62 Mercury, essentially I got kind of paid to take that car.
Wow.
If you really do all the math. So. And that car, it has been the bane of my existence for the last 11 years. So, recently built the motor for it, and everything that's brand new on it keeps breaking. So, I'm not doing anything to it recently. So, but yeah, it's just a fun car, though.
None of us really know that much about 62 Mercuries. Tell us more about the car, what it is.
So, 62 Mercury Monterey, it is a custom.
And four-door
sedan. You just never see them anymore, just because they're just a kind of an ugly car to begin with.
Yeah, nobody kept them.
Right, they were the first ones to go to the junkyard, or the first ones to go to the derby.
Uh-huh.
So to see one now is kind of an odd duck. Currently, it's pretty low. I like my cars low.
Yeah.
And
looks good. Yeah, steelies on it, wide whites, right?
Skinny whites. Okay. But chrome steelies, 59 Cadillac taillights, because they resemble the original taillights that are in it, and they're plentiful. So the original ones are not.
How are 59 Cadillac taillights plentiful?
They're reproduced like crazy. You can get them on eBay all day long for cheap, but you cannot find 62. Cannot find 62 Mercury taillights.
I'm not shocked at that. One of my favorite parts about this 62 Mercury story is that you needed a piece of trim, and so you went to tell us the story.
Yeah, so I was looking for a quarter panel trim for the duration of owning the vehicle, which at this point is now 11 years. Could never find that trim. Found a car, the whole car for sale. He wouldn't give me the trim. I had to go to Montana. I just bought the whole car.
So took a trailer to Montana, pulled the whole car back for a piece of
just for one piece
trim that you couldn't
and
get anywhere else.
Fortunately, there was other stuff on it that I could use, and I will be using. So I still have the car, and it's over at the acreage at my brother's house, so sitting there.
We're going to hear more about the acreage at your brother's house coming up. The 62, you rebuilt an FE block in that, right? A big block?
Correct.
390?
No, the what's in it now is a 410 that I had in a... Came with a 66 Mercury park lane that I had briefly, but the motor only had like 52,000 miles on it. The 352 that was in the Mercury, my 62, had a dead cylinder, so it was time to change it out. So I just swapped motors, drove it like that for a few years, and then it leaked oil a lot, so I decided I was going to take that motor out, the 410, and just reseal it and everything, clean it up, and then the further I got into it, I realized it's not going back in until I rebuilt it.
Okay.
And then that sat for another 4 years before I actually rebuilt it.
And you did all this in your garage?
Yeah. Oh, well, I did send the block out to get machined, because I can't do that in the garage, but everything else I did myself, yes.
Very good. So you know all about all kinds of cars. What's the challenges between rebuilding an FE Ford versus rebuilding a big block Chevy?
Price. Hands down, it's the price. FE should stand for like effing expensive, because they are so expensive. So in my opinion, they're one of the more expensive motors to build for Ford. So you got the white block's probably number one. You can build a flathead cheaper than you can build an FE motor.
Wow.
So
it's part of that is because of the parts don't swap. Like a big block Chevy, a water pump will work from 58 all the way up through 85, or the FE block. There's probably 20 different water pumps that fit on different blocks depending on what their application was and where they started. Is that part of the problem?
So FE is just FE. You can't do it on anything. And you can't put an FE behind any other Ford transmission. It has to be an FE bell housing transmission. So that's one other great thing that Ford did, was every motor had a different transmission bell housing.
Different starters, different flywheels.
Exactly, everything. Yeah. So there's nothing interchangeable. So you have to buy FE for FE. There's nothing else that you can use on anything else, except for the carburetor, which is universal anyway. So.
Right, exactly. You said you've had problems with the 62, but the motor's running strong, right? Is the rest of the car that's letting you down?
The motor runs great.
Transmission?
The transmission is junk. I have another one for it. But as we spoke before, I have a whole other frame for that car, because that does have some frame damage. When I do the frame swap, then I will put the other transmission
in. Wow.
So,
is this the frame from the Montana car?
No.
Different one.
I have another one, actually. So.
You're that guy.
I'm that guy. I am that guy.
All right. So this year, I like the 62. It's a gorgeous car. It looks great. It sits right. The Mexican blanket interior goes perfectly with it.
Yeah.
The freshly painted, rebuilt 410 looks fantastic. Really like that car, Courtney. It's a great car. And this year, you brought out, well, tell us about it, I won't guess.
So this is a 1963 Mercury Monterey, formerly a Colony Park, which was a station wagon, and has now been converted, well, sometime in the late 60s, it was converted into a, what we call a house car, or a camper car, if you will. And if you were to see the car, you would think that somebody took a slide-in camper,
right,
that you put in the back of a truck and just laid it in the back of this car.
Right, that's exactly how it looks.
That's exactly how it looks. But the truth is, the car was actually, the camper portion was actually built to the car. The wagon portion of it was cut off, and a husband and wife team in the late 60s grafted this camper on into the car and built it their own way.
All custom built, you're saying?
Correct.
Amazing, because it does look like they just parked a
79 Mitchell or something. Yeah,
exactly. Were they a Colorado family? Do you know this couple that was building these things?
I don't know that much of them. I just know that they did about 10 cars.
It looks like a hippie commune kind of you know, wet dream. I can see somebody get excited about it.
That's accurate.
Yeah.
That's pretty accurate, actually.
Okay, very good. All right, so give us a tour of the car. Tell us what's going on. What are we looking at?
Okay, so I found the car in a junkyard. There was no entrance door to the camper portion of it, so it was exposed to the elements, wildlife. It was a really nasty mess. So one of the first things I had to do was make a door. So it was my first attempt at making a door, and it worked, so it'll probably stay that way for a while. My wife and I just spent a bunch of time just cleaning all of the junk out of it, just the nastiness out of it. Once it was clean enough, then we used probably a gallon and a half of Kills.
Paint
primer.
What is
that? Oh. The paint primer for in houses and stuff. So
okay.
It took about a gallon and a half just to get it to where it would stop being brown. Then we were able to paint it white.
Wow.
On the inside. And then with my wife's creative interior design
stuff. She's very creative.
She came up with the ideas on how to do some things. The curtain ideas. What else? You had a dinette, but we decided to eliminate the dinette and just make it a bed, a permanent bed.
Yeah, just do outdoor dining.
Exactly. We're just going to do everything outside anyway, so because it is still, I mean, it's a car. It's not a real big space.
Well, I see, just standing here, I see a fridge, a sink, a range, an oven, air conditioner?
What is it? Heater.
Heater. Heater's more important than air conditioner. Pot, beds. You got a bed over the...
It's a cab over style.
Over style, exactly. Yep. I like the classic look of the interior with the, you know, the original bucket seats. This looks like original upholstery to me.
Those are actually Volkswagen bug seats. Whoever built the car originally, they made them work.
From the same time period, early 60s.
Yes, early 60s seats.
Original steering wheel, original dash. The dash is fantastic. It's got air conditioning.
It does have
air conditioning. This is a fancy car.
It was at one time. It was a fancy car.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how does it drive?
Right now, horrible.
Oh, I'm glad I asked.
right now, it does not drive well. It runs well, and it goes through all three gears, which I was surprised. But because I lowered it so much, and it's not on an air ride suspension, this is how low it is.
Cut coils?
Yeah, cut coils, and I actually had to adjust the... I got 3-inch blocks in the rear, and I had to take some leaves out to get it this low.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it rides.
It rides pretty firm.
It's on the ground. So
and what motor's in this?
It has a 390 Super Marauder, Mercury Super Marauder.
Is that an FE block?
It's also an FE.
Okay, all right. Something more for you to look forward to.
Yeah, more work to do.
Does it run well? Does it smoke? Does it chatter?
It's got a brand new carburetor on it. I put a Holley on it, and it actually runs better than the brand new 410 that I built.
Wow.
So
what carb is on the 410?
The same one that's on here, which is a Holley 650. So
you prefer Hollies?
You know, I think I'm going to start preferring electronic fuel injection.
Yeah.
Because I'm just tired of dealing with them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Especially here in Colorado, elevation changes and everything else. I remember when I was a kid, my carbureted Chevys, I was always out there first thing in the morning in the winter, sticking a handle of a screwdriver in the choke to prop it up and everything to start in the winter. Yeah, so. Yeah. Or loud and clear.
Getting an electric choke to work on something old like this isn't always nice either. So at the moment, I have the choke wide open with zip ties. So it doesn't stay high idle forever. But other than that, it actually runs pretty good. If the odometer is correct, it's only got about 24,000 miles on it.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I know you and Stephanie did a lot of work to get it out here this weekend. A lot of people have come by and gave you praise about it. It's worthy of that. It's fantastic. It's one of one as far as we know. Very impressive. Very
cool. Thank you.
Very cool. Linda, anything? Linda, Courtney, Linda.
Wrapping it up. Courtney, thank you for joining us on 98.5 FM, 1040 AM and 95.7 FM, Cars and Crafts.
Thank you for having me.
We had a great conversation with Chelsea at PPIR for the Rock and Rumble show. Tell us who Chelsea is. Linda?
Chelsea's a cutie pie. She was wearing a pineapple dress and had some great pinup hair going on. She's an amazing lady. She's got a huge marketing background. I believe she's the events director, marketing director for PPIR.
I think you're absolutely correct.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh. That's Chelsea.
Yeah. Great conversation with her.
Cutie patootie.
Talking about the future of PPIR and those kind of shows. They have another show coming up. The
Trucks and Tunes.
There you go.
Yeah.
I was here last year
it wasn't as big as it is this year. Last year it was huge. It's so impressive what you guys have done with this show. Let me speak for a minute, not to cut you off, but one of the things I really liked about this show is it's not a car show where it's beautiful cars and lawn chairs. It's dynamic. You got people doing laps, you got the drag race going on, and 20 other things that I can't keep track of. How long have you been with it? You know, how much of your personality is stamped on this event?
So this last year was actually my first year at Hot Rod Rock and Rumble. I was hired to promote it and had attended it. So again, it just keeps getting more exciting every year, understanding, being able to tell these cool stories. But I am, again, a Colorado Springs native. I've been to NASCAR races here, IndyCar races here, and what a great history. It actually started as a dirt horse track, so we still got some horsepower out there. And really the goal, Hot Rod Rock and Rumble, it's music and motorsports. Like, you know, they're marrying automotive and wonderful wine and beverages. That's kind of what we really want to do. So we're looking at expanding these types of offerings. We're actually going to do a Trucks and Tunes Outlaw Weekend, Labor Day weekend 2022. So it's very similar, right? But it's kind of just that outlaw, country, trucks, concerts. So really, we're really looking to be a music and motorsport venue.
That's outstanding. Are you going to outgrow PPIR? I mean, you really can. It's a unique facility.
It's so unique. Like I said, what a great history. We're at the base of Pikes Peak, America's Mountain. You know, the Springs and Fountain are becoming so much closer together. There's so much happening. You know, Olympic City, USA, in fact, very cool. The paratriathletes trained here before they left to Kona before the Paralympics because road course, right? We had a controlled environment. They didn't have to be out on the street. So the other thing that's very cool is we are also the home of Felci Adaptive Motorsports. So former Furniture Row Racing. I don't know if you're familiar out of Denver.
They won NASCAR with
Cup Series with Martin Truex in 2017.
Martin Truex Jr. And then they folded up their tent. But they were, you know, talk about little guys that could. I mean, they were, you know, based out of Denver, nobody bases a NASCAR.
No, they are the only ones.
Yeah.
Yep.
So go ahead.
So Joe Groney, who was the president and GM of that team, is our COO. So again, he brings amazing history with us, sponsorships, understands a lot of really unique things. But what's very cool is one of the leading neurosurgeons in the world, Dr. Fauci, not Fauci.
Yeah.
You know, he operates on people when they have these injuries, you know, quadriplegics and paraplegics. And for years, you know, he had been looking for some sort of outlet or adaptive sport because you think about these patients, they've lost all of their freedoms. And so he actually approached Joe and the team owner, Barney Visser, I believe 6 years ago, and said, could we adapt a race car? And so we have here on site an 850 horsepower cup car that a quad can drive with push and pull of their breath.
There was a I think it was a C7 Corvette, that one of the IndyCar owners used.
Same technology.
Same company?
No. So they really, our goal with Felci Adaptive Motorsports is the car is a sexy way to show that technology, but ultimately that technology that is put into that car, we're looking to integrate into these people's lives. So we're actually working on a drive-by-thought system right now. We have a quadriplegic who has a chip in his brain, who is literally training his brain to have a wave over and over again. And hopefully at Daytona, or at least a race in 2022, we'll be able to showcase that technology at one of the races. So again, it's not that we would ever have a thinking driving car, but if you think about that technology in somebody's home, turn on a light, close the door, it gives them some freedom and independence.
Well, even just the transfer of technology for paraplegics to be able to drive a car in a different way, you know, because
hand controls,
you know, the other systems are so, they're, you know, I can't think of the word, antediluvian. I mean, they're so 50s mechanical,
right?
You know, so you're talking about, you know, next level tech, which is very impressive.
Yeah, so like I said, I mean, that program lives out of the garages here at PPIR. And again, we have a track, so we can run a program, again, you know, Wounded Warriors or Paralympians to come out and really, you know, it gives them their freedom back. And it's, again, it just helps bring awareness to the need for funding that continued research and technology.
We haven't talked about this at all. I may be stepping in it, but, you know, the biggest motorsports event in Colorado Springs is, of course, the Pikes Peak Hill Climb, which is older than the Indianapolis 500. Is there any connection? Is there any crossover? Is there, what's that?
Second oldest, yes. Auto race to the Indy 500.
The Indy 500 is older?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? I thought Pikes Peak.
I used to work for the tourism board. So actually, we did have a paraplegic adapt one of our cars and race the hill climb last year. Didn't quite turn out like we wanted, but absolutely, it's a wonderful partnership. And obviously with the 100th anniversary coming up, you know, we would really like to hopefully tap into a driver and be involved in that, so.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I can't imagine. Pikes Peak to me is one of the great challenges of auto racing. And you know, all my limbs and my parts work and my brain is okay. So I can't imagine tackling that at less than 100%.
Rob Cherisley, our Parsons, is a pretty famous drift car driver. And so we adapted one of the cars so he could drive. And he's the first para to ever compete that wasn't exhibition, I believe, since 1988. Wow. And obviously their biggest thing with that is that he could exit the vehicle on his own if something happened. And he did end up having to do that. So
okay,
there was a tree involved. Mm-hmm. But everybody was safe. And we were just, again, happy to be part of that and bring more awareness to the mobility challenge community.
You mentioned the time attack event.
Track attack, sorry.
Time attack's probably...
It's an autocross. It's a little different. Yeah. So that's why we called it time attack for a while, but it's a little bit different. So that's why we renamed it, just so there wasn't a little bit of confusion.
Okay. So tell people about that. When is it run? Who can participate?
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yes. So I believe we have one. So we do points, usually earlier in the year, probably January, February. We do practice. We get people out here back on the track, work on their cars. We usually do 8 points rounds throughout the season. And I mean, like I said, we have people that come out in Ferraris and Honda Civics. I mean, really, it's really just to introduce people to the track.
What's the difference between a Honda Civic and a Ferrari?
But I mean, it's just one of those things where people are like, how do I race? How do I get into this? And we call it the gateway drug, right? We want people to have a safe, comfortable, controlled environment. You know, the grassroots community is amazing. I mean, They'll give you a wrench, they'll help, you know what I mean? It's just very cool, it's very approachable. And the whole Track Attack program started by word of mouth in a Facebook group. I mean, truly, truly grassroots motorsports.
So if I have a Honda Civic, do I need a roll bar? Do I need a fire suit? Do I need a helmet?
You do need a helmet.
Do I need a flame retardant system? Do
no.
I need special tires? Do
no.
I need custom suspension? So
different classes, yes, okay. Absolutely. And like I said, I mean, it really is. And we also do off-the-street drags. We do a handful of, we have an 8th mile drag strip. And again, $25 a person, as long as it's street legal. Come run it. You know, we want to get kids off the street, and that really is the goal. You know, we want them to have a place, but where they can be safe, and our staff can help them and guide them. So, yeah.
Other municipalities, I've seen like the Sheriff's Department, Police Department get involved in these kind of local drags. Are we seeing any of that in Colorado Springs?
Yes. So Fountain PD is fabulous to us. In fact, they're here. they come to almost all of our events. You know, they support us wonderfully. And they actually, I believe there is a statewide program now in place where all of the police departments are kind of supporting going to the track. So we don't do like take it to the track like Vandermeer, but certainly that's not out of the question.
What have I missed? What should everybody know that we haven't talked about?
Just that PPIR is open. So I think, you know, people remember coming to NASCAR races and IndyCar races and think we're closed, and we're not. Plus, we're in this bowl. So when people drive by on the highway, there's all kinds of stuff going on in here. They just don't know it.
Well, there was 10,000 Volkswagens parked over there.
Hey, yeah, there was an NDA. But, you know, like I said, we're doing so many cool things. You know, we have runners that come, Grid Life, you know, the Motorcycle Road Racing Association comes. So again, even if it's just spectating or coming and driving, there's plenty of opportunity. So PPIR.com, you know, we have an events calendar. We do a monthly newsletter. We're on social. So, yeah.
So the Track Attack, the Truck and Tune, the Rock and Roll, all that stuff is on the website. The calendar's on the website.
Yes, sir.
And all the information on how to get involved, how to get tickets, how to bring your car,
yep,
all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Very good. Matt, Katie, what have I missed? What should we talk about that we haven't talked about?
We just really want to take the time to thank PPIR for putting this on and inviting us to be a part of it. For me, as a car guy, I go to a lot of car shows every year, and this is by far the best. Like you said, it's so dynamic. It's one thing to look at these nice cars sitting in a lawn. It's another to be out, seeing them race and run around the track. So it's just a blast to be here.
I was going
to
ask you, too, because you're in the Track Attack. What do you drive?
So I have a 1990 Acura Integra.
Okay.
And you want to talk about a slow car.
It's like a Civic, only a better body.
maybe not this one. and to kind of go off what you were saying, do you need all these things? No, it's actually better if you don't. It gives you a chance to learn what you're doing wrong first before you start throwing all this money at it. So it's better to kind of start backwards and focus inward on your driving before you focus on what you're driving.
Right.
So,
but if I have a Mazda Miata that's got a full cage, it's got sticky tires on it, big disc brakes that I've been dragging up to Northern Colorado to do track events with, is there a class for me here at PPIR locally?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right, outstanding.
Well, we'll be a part of this Rock and Rumble as many times as you will have us back.
Absolutely.
So, this will be a permanent partnership.
We're big fans, and I'm huge fans of the 50s and 60s cars, too. I think it's the hardcore of America when you talk about cars. Linda, what have we missed? What's on your mind?
Future. What's next year? What's the year after? Do we have dates? Is there a reserve? Is there a save the date? What is there?
Yes, we have 22 dates. So I believe it will be, so again, Labor Day, Trucks and Tunes, Outlaw Weekend, and obviously Seven Peaks canceled this year. So there's a great hole to fill. And what's so cool, again, we never want to be a static car show. It's not just music. It's not just motorsports. It is literally all of it happening at the same time.
You've got music all day, every day.
Yes.
We have 12, 15 different.
I believe 15. I believe it was the most this year. And so again, the same thing with Trucks and Tunes. What's very cool is people are going to be able to buy a pass and pull their truck up to the stage and like have their own tailgate party and watch concerts.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, we're really excited.
I need to go buy a truck.
Yeah. And the Honda Civic.
Yeah.
I'll borrow his attempt.
Yeah.
Okay.
When he's done with it. Put some new brakes on it. We'll go.
Yeah, perfect.
Thanks, guys.
No, thank you for having us.
Good stuff.
This is great.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us at KPBF Radio, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. We'll see you guys next time.
The best thing about, we talked to Chelsea about this, the best thing about that show is that it's not a standard car show where you sit around a lawn chair and people come by and talk about your car. It's what I call more of a dynamic show. They had drag races, which are pretty exciting. Anybody could line up and drag against somebody else. They also did laps on the speedway. And one of the things you and I commented on is they were doing laps in the wrong direction.
Yes.
Why do you think they were doing that?
To confuse me.
To confuse you. I thought part of the reason they ran them backwards was to keep people from driving too fast, because they're used to going, if you're used to going in America on ovals at all, you go the other way.
Right.
So to go the opposite way may keep you from getting too carried away. But they had cones instead of, too, so you could accelerate down the straight, but well before you got to the corner, they had a pinch down and they wanted to just slow down so you could crawl around the corner.
Just in case your brakes go out. They also had burnouts.
They did.
I don't know what that is,
but
I know that I saw it on the schedule.
Yeah.
What's a burnout?
It's when you sit in one place and burn the tires. If you know anybody that owns a Dodge Challenger, you've seen burnouts, because that's all they do is sit in their driveway and do burnouts. They just melt tires. So that's the excuse for people perpetuating burnouts. So a lot of guys on the street like to do burnouts because they think it's cool and because they think they're drag racers, neither one of which I'm particularly a fan of. I think it's really hard on equipment. And yeah, a guy was there doing live pinstripes, old school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It was very different from what I would have expected.
And lots of vendors.
Yes.
Hot dogs, pretzels, hamburgers, popcorn, beer, wine. Yeah.
Beer, wine.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, good show.
Growing up in the military, when I went to car shows, we would be on the flight line and they would line up all of the cars, and then they would also line up all of the airplanes. So it was really cool as a little one to go out there and see all the different cars, and they would do an air show, and then they would do the car show and drag racing and all that other stuff. So it was different for me. This was my first car show, technically, to be able to see something like that. It was kind of neat.
And that's a good point you bring up, because airplanes and the jet age did influence car styling a lot in the late 50s. Mm. That's why cars have fins, because they look more like jets, which was the new cool and groovy thing, space program and everything else. And one of our favorite vendors that we met at PPIR.
Matt and Katie. We met them. They were actually a sponsor. Were they the title sponsor? I don't know. They were one of the sponsors of the Hot Rod Rock and Rumble 2021. Did an interview with them on site, and then got to go to their venue, Boxing Brothers Cider.
Right. And Montsorvino Urban Winery, which is a big deal. And I think they were launching Little Red.
Yes.
Their specific blend, I think, at PPIR.
Very yummy, in my opinion.
Yeah. Delicious. What's different about it, and Matt and Katie are going to talk about this, but what's different about it is they not only blend fabulous grapes, they start with Pinot, Petit Syrah, and a Merlot, but they age it in whiskey barrels for a short period of time.
From another amazing local vendor, Axe and Oak.
Axe and Oak. Mm-hmm. We plan on doing a lot of that with Cars and Crafts. One of the main things we want to do with the show is to go out and be in the community and be at these craft beverage makers, be on site with them, meet car guys, meet them, and talk about Cars and Crafts.
Right.
Here at the power of KPPF, 98.5 FM.
So, welcome.
Tell us about
Monte Servino. So we have a nice selection here that Katie put together. Katie, what did you put together for us in the tasting?
So this is a flight of the six ciders and wines that we have on tap. It starts off here with our dry apple, which is like a really fun green apple tart, nice and dry, kind of an English pub style. Our second one on the menu
sounds
here.
Delicious. That's all I need, just that. Sounds great.
All done.
You know, when you start with the best, what's, you know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the second one is going to be the mango. That is our summer seasonal. We're getting to its close now that we're in September. but it's just a fantastic, really refreshing, very tropical, nice red mango. Delicious. This one is a taproom exclusive. It is called Blood Orange Rosemary. It is sort of a semi-dry, so it's not too sweet, not too dry. And it has a lot of that wonderful savory rosemary flavors and that nice citrus blood orange. That
blood orange is fantastic.
That. It's very delicious. Awesome. If you love blood orange and rosemary, that's probably going to be your absolute favorite.
We may be here for a while.
I know. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've been looking forward to this. It's exceeding. Go ahead. Thank you.
Our fourth in the line here is our spiced pumpkin. That is our newest fall seasonal. It is made with real pumpkins, so it's more like a pumpkin pie than, let's say, a coffee that's spiced with the pumpkin pie spices. So it has pumpkin first, and then, of course, all of the wonderful fall spices that you'd expect it to have.
A lot of filtering.
Oh my goodness.
Pumpkin's one of the worst ones outside of pineapple for us to make. Even mango is very difficult, but pumpkin is tough.
The fifth in line there is the caramel apple. It is a blend of apple, of course, green apple, red apples, and a smooth toasted caramel and a little bit of vanilla. So it is perfect for the fall season as well. And then lastly is our sangria. This one is made with our Monte Servino wine, Little Red, and it has a lot of fresh fruit juices in it, such as we do cranberry. Of course, we do apple juice as well. We do orange juice, lime juice, lemon juice, and a little bit of grape juice. So kind of a lot of fresh juices that go into that one. And it's a very good one all year round.
You're very good at this. You really are.
She's done it a few times.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to out in front of the public more often.
Yes.
I disagree with that.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
That is what he said.
Awesome.
Ready to try some?
Awesome.
Okay, so we're going to.
All right, let's start with our dry cider.
Okay.
This is the green apple one that you mentioned.
It is, yes. So as I mentioned, it is the green apple dry cider. So it just means it's not as sweet as.
I was going to ask you the definition of dry versus.
Yeah. So on a scale of dry to sweet, of course, dry being less sweet, so very low residual sugars. And sweet being quite sweet. So this is on the lower end of that spectrum, considered to be a dry cider.
It's tasty.
Nice and crisp.
It's tasty.
It's tart, which is nice.
It is.
On a hot day.
It's not sweet really at all, you know, what you would think of for a standard cider. So
Heavy crab apple blend. So you're not using the dessert apples that are known for their sweetness.
I could taste that.
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay.
This is a mango, if I remember right.
Yes, that is correct. So number two.
You said red mango? Go ahead.
Yes, red mangoes. So it has this really fun tropical flavor. Also with the apples, it just kind of has this really fun kind of tropical fruit punch type thing.
Definitely. If you can get a red ripe Brazilian mango, it is so sweet. It's that classic mango flavor that you're looking for.
That's breakfast. That's really delicious.
It is.
It goes down so easily.
Yes.
You can tell the difference between the mangoes are pretty tart, in my opinion, and yet it's not anywhere near as tart as the green apple one.
Right.
It's just delicious. Easy. Beautiful.
So that's our summer seasonal, and that's exactly why it's our summer seasonal, is it just goes down really smoothly. It's refreshing. It's a little bit of bubbly.
What does that mean, summer? How much longer are you going to have it?
Not much longer. We are at the end of mango's season, so it usually kind of fizzles out here at the beginning part of September, so we might have two more weeks with it. I know.
Okay.
But no worries. It comes back next summer.
Okay. So you'll keep me as a customer all year long.
They have a keg in back with your name.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
Just for you.
It's tapped, especially for you. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Linda's.
Right.
Only.
She's got a rack on her bedroom wall to hose. So.
We got straw.
Yeah. Excellent.
All right. Well, next in the lineup is our taproom exclusive. So it's only available here. We do a few small batches throughout the year. And this one is our current small batch. It is called Blood Orange Rosemary. Ah, and of course, it's an apple base.
I remember that.
But blood orange and of course, rosemary. The rosemary has this really fun,
I can smell it.
Savory mm-hmm. kind of quality to
oh,
it,
yeah.
which counteracts the acidity from the oranges. But it goes really well together. It's kind of savory and sweet and refreshing all at the same time.
Wow. It tastes amazingly like blood orange rosemary.
Exactly.
Yeah. Really nice.
It's good. Absolutely. It's different. It's a different
it
flavor. It's not my favorite. Mm. I have my favorite already, but
I do like the savory aspect. Go ahead.
It's really designed for the ready-to-drink cocktail drinker. So the one who is buying the cocktails from the liquor store and they're already canned, they're looking for these pre-mixed drinks that they don't have to add anything to it. And this was kind of our first version of that.
Mm.
So it's ready to pour. You open it up out of your growler, you pour it on ice, and it's like a cocktail.
I would say on ice would be great, or a smoothie, or like a slushy,
right.
Slurpee.
And you even find some of the drinkers here will buy a growler of it to take home and then continue to expand on that and make it a cocktail with a hard spirit.
Right.
So it's kind of
vodka
more for those
or gin
who are looking for it, right, who want that premix that's already
it
made.
It might be really good with gin, especially something
for
very
sure.
herbaceous, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
very
botanical.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, this is our fall seasonal. So this is replacing mango for the fall, and it is called Spiced Pumpkin. The reason we call it Spiced Pumpkin is because
it's not pumpkin spice.
Exactly.
Nice.
It contains real pumpkin. And of course, it also has a blend of all your fall spices that you come to love.
This is a real treat, guys. It really is.
Well, thanks for enjoying it with us.
Yeah,
we're glad you guys made it.
Not much on the nose.
Mm-mm. That's true.
It's very light.
It is. So after the blood orange rosemary, it might take a little bit of a cleansing to kind of get some of the spices.
You know, it's such a deft touch, all these. It's so easy to be concerned that it's not blood orangey enough or it's not mango-y enough, you know, but you guys have done such a great balance with all these. It definitely tastes like what you're describing, but it's not like some dishes where I just want to bite and then I want to walk away from it.
Right. Exactly.
You know, or, you know, some craft brewers get carried away with that too. Well, everybody does.
I hate the term drinkability because it was coined by the macros, but it is true. There's something to having something that doesn't blow your palate for the meal. It's also what brings you back to have another one after dinner. You know, we don't want it to just be a one and done kind of scenario.
It's delicious. You know, and I'm not a White Claw person either. What you're delivering here, people that drink White Claw, if they only knew.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
They're gonna.
Right. I appreciate you.
Yeah, we're gonna help. Let's let them know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Anti-White Claw.
Yeah. It's a t-shirt.
I got it at the very end.
Okay, good. It's definitely not one of those spiced pumpkin that blows your palate.
That's what I was expecting. That's probably why I didn't get it.
I will drive across the street to avoid. I just
absolutely.
Don't. Yeah, I don't.
Why would you want to drink a couple of those? You just want maybe a couple sips and then you're done. Right?
Yeah.
So this just kind of marries. You still always want to taste the apple in everything that we do, because that is cider. So you always want to taste that apple first or second or third, but you still want it to be in within that palate.
Okay. Is that one of the definitions of cider? It has to have apples?
Or pear.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So those are the two fruits.
Pear cider
is delicious.
Cider.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then there's perry, which is 100% pear.
Okay.
With no apple.
Oh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But pears in Colorado are even harder. Mm. The season's like 10 minutes. I know it is.
I know. Yeah, that's very well said.
Yeah.
That is true.
Absolutely.
So who's the palate at Monte Cervino?
Katie's the palate
at
Monte Cervino.
I think we both are. Every palate's so different. So you have to have that yin and yang, you know, that balance of a palate.
Behind it, you guys are the team that's behind everything. Very impressive.
Thank you.
Very impressive.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a high compliment.
It.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. No, thank you. Mas.
All right. Number five on the lineup is our caramel apple. This is also a taproom exclusive. Like I mentioned previously, it's kind of a blend of red and green apples. It also has a nice toasty caramel to it with a little bit of vanilla. So it's nice and soft, kind of smooth, but it also kind of punches with a little bit of apple tartness.
You may not want to share this trade secret, but where do you get toasted caramel? Do you make your own?
We make our own tea, is what we call it. It's a tea. It's really a simple syrup, but we're making our own simple syrup that gives it that caramel flavor.
Do it here? I didn't
we
see
do,
any.
We do it here.
Do so you? I didn't see have... any stovetops back there. Or
behind the curtain.
We do. Top secret. We have one of those big propane burners, and we have a keg that's been cut the top off of, and it makes a perfect stainless steel pot, 15-gallon capacity. So it's an old-school brewer's way of doing things.
I like it.
It turns out well. It's a caramel apple.
It's right down the middle.
Absolutely.
It can appeal to everybody.
It's identifiable.
Yeah.
People know what caramel
exactly.
apple is.
Yep. The other ones are delicious, but this I think is, you know, for everybody, you know, you don't have to have any special appreciation. If you think you like a cider at all, bam. I don't know what my favorite is. They're all delicious.
Yeah.
It depends on what I'm doing, I guess.
That's true.
When we bring a flight out to somebody, we always say, you know, we're looking forward to you finding your favorite.
Okay.
And that's kind of been one of our trademarks here in the tap room is you might not like all of them, but there's at least one that's just going to be kind of your soul cider. You know, cliche as it sounds, yeah. But.
This one's my favorite.
Yeah, you're still on the mango.
All right.
Yeah. This one's my number two. And I have a tie for number three.
All right. So the blood orange rosemary is a number three.
It's pretty good.
Okay. Good.
That's probably number one for me, just because it's so creative, it's so ambitious, and you nailed it. You know, it's like doing the perfect roast chicken. It sounds simple, but
no.
That's true. But when it's done well, it's
perfect. Yeah, it's yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's something we've teased in the market before. We've done it as a mint julep. We did a mint julep cider. It was apple. Oh, it was apple based, aged in an Axe in the Oak barrel for 2 years, and then finished with mint.
You need to spend more time on camera
focus
too.
On you guys.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah. It should just be the Linda Katie show.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. We'll go drive hot rods.
Oh, I'm down for that.
Yeah.
And we'll enjoy the cider wine.
Had a great time with you guys today. Looking forward to the next show. What are we going to talk about next time, David?
Well, we spent some time talking to Matt and Katie about this 29 Ford Speedster that they restored. It's basically an original car with all original parts, and it's built to resemble a dirt track racer from the late 20s. A pretty incredible piece of machinery, and I'm gonna dare say you've never seen one before. Had you seen one before?
I had not seen one before.
Yeah. So pretty striking piece of machinery, and it does run and drive. He offered to let me drive it even, which I'll take him up on next time.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So stay tuned. We'll see you next time on Cars and Crafts, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM, the power of horsepower.
Monster Vino and Boxing Brothers Hard Cider have brought to you Cars and Crafts with David and Linda, reminding you to drink responsibly and use designated drivers. Also, listen weekly at 2 p.m. Sundays on KPPF 98.5, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. And downloadable on Podbean, the horsepower of radio.